This is Jeff Bastian, and you're listening to Ignited with Meaning, where we'll be exploring the terrain of a meaningful life, creating a roadmap for that, and generating more happiness along the way. Have you ever wondered what the meaning of life is or how to make your life more meaningful? We're here to find answers to those questions, and today we'll be talking with Ivan Skellum, who has developed a totally unique rite of passage called Reclaim Your Inner Throne. Ivan's goal is to make a massive impact in this world for the better. He wants to reach 1 million men and help them through an inner journey that results in them understanding their purpose, feeling confident as a man, and ultimately finding a way to give generously of their gifts to the world. In this interview, we cover some really interesting topics like how Hollywood helps when meditation fails, the challenge of fatherhood, and a deep dive into the ideas of purpose and calling. I hope those topics pique your interest, but I should warn you that Ivan does not mince words, so if you have a particularly sensitive ear with respect to the full vocabulary of the English language, this episode is not for you. However, I found Ivan and this interview to be quite compelling, so I do encourage you to stick around and listen in. So without further ado, join me as we hear Ivan's story and vision to get moving.
Ivan, thank you for making time with me on your Friday evening.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me.
I'm really excited to be talking with you. I've been on your website. I've looked at your introductory videos to what you do. You have a couple different websites, actually, both the Masculinity Movies and Reclaim Your Inner Throne. They both have really interesting content. I'm wondering, you know, just so that give the audience a chance to get to know you, I'm wondering if you could start by telling us a little bit, just backing up about this Masculinity Movies website that you created. It was your first one. And just tell us a little bit about, you know, what was going on in your life at that time, why you decided to begin that website, and what you learned from it.
Yeah, masculinitymovies.com was a very important part of my personal journey. I think I'll go back to the beginning of my 20s when I had what I would call a bit of a life crisis. And shit was hitting the fan in a psychological way where the things that I had repressed and the things that my whole family system had repressed somehow made itself visible in my psyche. I think on some level I have quite a shamanistic makeup as a person, so I tend to be able to feel things in a very strong and intense way, whether it's feeling other people or feeling interpersonal dynamics, group dynamics, that kind of a thing. And, you know, back then that was a real challenge for me to be taking on all of this. And so I went under in some way, and to save myself, really, is what it felt like. I went online and I started pursuing answers, and I ended up pursuing a spiritual path. I found meditation through my research, and I found Buddhism, and I started really going on a path of transcendence for, I would say, like 7 years, and meditating a lot and pursuing Tibetan Buddhism wholeheartedly and very seriously thinking about enlightenment and this kind of thing. I think I was 28 years old when I was in India, in Bodh Gaya, and when I was made painfully aware of how my spiritual pursuit had in some way been a bypass for addressing the very real challenges that had arisen inside of me at the beginning of my 20s. And so I realized then, as this woman that I'd fallen in love with in Bodh Gaya, you know, just on the outskirts of Bodh Gaya. It was a dusty night, and it was in this small restaurant outside of the town center where I went one last time to see if I could find her. And, you know, she walked into the night with this other guy, and I had this moment of like, oh, I don't even dare to shout her name. And I realized in that moment that, you know, I had meditated a lot, but I still didn't know anything about creating the kind of relationship I wanted with a woman. I felt in a way helpless that I had been pursuing this path of transcendence, but not really mastered much of the human dimension. You know, it was more like trying to be like love and light and all of these ideas that people have when they go on the path of transcendence. I was never really a New Age hippie, but in a way, I was still pursuing that. And so I came back to Norway, and I found a woman I liked very quickly, and I started a relationship with this woman, and it was actually my first real relationship at the end of my 20s. Like, I hadn't really addressed this part of my life at all, and as I was getting to know what it was like to be in a relationship with her, I started to realize, yeah, fuck, man, this whole thing was about me not really understanding what it means to be a man. And nobody ever told me what it means to be a man. And all of these things that I had carried inside of me for all of this time, all of these internal struggles, were all related to a coming of age process that our culture has completely lost track of. I realized the impact on me in a personal way of the loss of ritual process. And it hit me really hard. Like, wow, we don't understand anything about this in our culture. And I was like, I was the guy looking for the answers, right? I was the guy with the problem. But I didn't find anyone who was even thinking about it seriously. And this was like 10 years ago, and these questions were not as up in the public consciousness as they're starting to become today. And so I was just floored. Like, nobody actually even reflects on what it means to be a man. What is wrong with this picture? There isn't actually anyone that I can go to and ask. And so that really started a process for me that led to me one night, you know, I was just watching two movies with my woman, and I had this moment of like things slowing down and me having a very clear and illuminating insight that, wow, we have lost it in our culture, but it's still in our movies. You know, these narratives of transformation, of hero's journeys and coming of age and all of these things that are not part of our school systems, they're not part of our typical conversations or relationships, but we go to the movies and there we just like sit there with our jaws dropping, you know, like, wow, it's so exciting. But this is what's supposed to be happening in our real lives, I understood. And so in that moment, I made a commitment. I'm going to write about this. Even though I'm the guy with the questions, I'm going to write about this. And soon enough, I became the guy with the answers because, as I said, almost nobody had actually really thought about this in a serious way.
So this is just a striking story. What you did in your early 20s feels to me like that. Yes, that is the thing that people do when they go to find answers about sort of the meaning of life, how to, you know, spiritually awaken. And you found yourself in a position where actually Hollywood had the answers, as opposed, you know, usually people go to Hollywood for entertainment, but here you found this real kernel of insight about masculinity.
Yeah, I think that is the game-changing insight that, I mean, this was my way into archetypes again. I had such a strong fascination for mythological narratives when I was a wee lad, you know, back in the days. And I was really falling in love with Greek and Greek myths and also the Norse, like the Norwegian fairy tales. And obviously what makes this so compelling is that there are stories that are, they're archetypal stories on some level. And all good stories are archetypal. They have a message that is in some way perennial. You know, it's something that we recognize as on some level relevant for our own lives. But when we have become so ritually tone deaf and so numb and so unaware because of whatever addictions and whatever peer pressure and whatever numbing agents that we're being exposed to on a daily basis, we may not even realize that why I'm excited when I watch a movie is because the archetypes that play out on the movie screen are the very same archetypes that operate within me.
So can you give us an example of that? Like what's an example of a movie where you saw an archetype of a man that inspired you that you feel is lost in today's culture?
Yeah. You know, when I was 17 years old, I had a very impactful experience. I watched Braveheart.
Mm-hmm.
It was 1995. I was an insecure young man full of anxiety and not really feeling like I was succeeding in life. And then I went with my friends to the movie theater in my little town that evening, and we watched Braveheart. And I love that movie. I still do. I haven't seen it in years, but there was something about it that really plucked my soul strings, you know, like ding, 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 like pluck, pluck. You know, there's this guy, right? So first of all, he has a dad that speaks to him in a way that I yearned to be spoken to when I was a boy. There's this scene where his father he wants to go into the fight with the English, and he's just a young boy, and his father kneels down in front of him and gives him this little blessing, essentially saying that, no, you can't come. I'm paraphrasing here, but you know, and this isn't going to battle in this way, isn't what makes us men. It's what's up here that makes us men. It's like, so there's a blessing, and the blessing of like, develop your mind, develop your consciousness, develop your capacities, and become the man that you can be, like to have that from your father in a blessing way, not as a reprimand. That was something that I had always longed for when I was a boy. I was essentially feeling, I mean, I love my father, he's dead now, but he was a good man in so many ways, but his way of teaching me how to be a man was pointing to all of the ways that I could be better. Never really giving me the feeling that I was good where I was. And so here was William Wallace receiving this blessing from his father. It's just this one scene, man. Just that one scene alone was enough. So mm-hmm. That's just the archetypal relationship between a father and a son, where there's supposed to be some sort of a blessing, some sort of an osmosis of healthy masculine transmission from the adult to the child. And then comes, you know, then comes the mentor into the picture. So there is the archetype of the mentor that comes in when William Wallace's father dies in that battle. And Uncle Argyle comes in and takes William Wallace away on adventures to Europe and to distant lands. And he essentially goes on this long adventure of initiation and coming of age that is not really portrayed in the movie, but it comes through in a very impactful way anyway. And then he returns to his culture, and he comes with full of, you know, he's a worldly man, and he knows all kinds of different languages, but he comes back to the simple folk of the Highlands of Scotland. So that was just part of the story, right? But then he's called on to actually rise up using all of the gifts that he gathered on the travels with Uncle Argyle and to use them in service of his people. And I think the thing that, like, the love story with Merin and with the queen-to-be and all of that obviously was very compelling, but the idea that a man could be so committed to a purpose, to a cause, to a vision, that he was gladly willing to give his life for it, like with his heart, not in just like in a obeying orders kind of a way, but because his heart was so committed to the well-being of his people, that just floored me. I you know, in my anxious, insecure place, I was very self-centered. I think there is, when we are feeling that kind of anxious, we are essentially in some way in a very narcissistic mode, because everything that I think about is how will others perceive me, right? And here was a complete flip. This man was just wanting to offer himself, his gifts to the people. And in that moment, I received a transmission of something that was possible in the male experience, in the human experience, but in a particularly male way that on some level impacted my soul's journey.
Wow. Yeah. There's so much you just said there that would be interesting to unpack. The first thing that comes to mind for me is, as a father, it's really interesting being in the place between my dad and my son, where I think as a father, with each day, I have more appreciation for my dad and what he was able to do. And just in the way in which he did his best to live his life. And at the same time, you know, any shortcomings that I previously saw in him, I just say, well, of course he had those shortcomings. I mean, it's so hard to, you know, figure out what I want to do, take the, you know, invest the energy into my calling, but also to fully understand, you know, what it means to be a man in today's society, and then to be able to also teach that to my son, or to be able to be conscious of what that is and to teach him that's a really tall task. So the fact that you're able to, you know, see that archetype and to know that that's out there, that's just interesting for me to think about as I go along in my journey of being a father. How can I consciously bring these things into my awareness? And then also, how can I role model them and teach them to my son?
Yeah. I'm not a father to a son. I do feel compassion with you. You know, it seems to me to be a very challenging time to be raising boys, as everything that we have come to know as the male experience or masculinity seems to be called into question at a very fundamental way in our culture. And how to navigate the responsibility of raising a boy to be a good and self-confident and grounded man, and at the same time trying to fit into all of these, I don't know, I don't see all of these narratives of toxic masculinity and all of these things as very healthy, but there's something there, right? And so we're in the middle of, yeah, questioning all of the posturing of the masculine, of the male mode of being, and at the same time wanting our sons to be powerful. So I don't know. I'm would be interested. How is it for you to be in the midst of? I'm sure you know what I'm talking about when I'm saying that everything is changing in terms of what it means to be a man.
Yeah, it's what do I say? You know, I know that I'm not going to know all the answers. And so part of me just tells myself that if I'm doing the best that I can and role modeling the best that I can, there's no way I can leave my kids without some scar, without some false perception of who they're supposed to be. And then that's going to be their journey. So that there's two sides of it. One, I have to do my best. And two, there's no way I can be perfect. So that's in summary how I navigate that.
I have a very dear friend, one of my very closest male friends, Vegard. He's a Norwegian guy, and we've been on quite a journey together. And one of the things, I think the most beautiful thing that he's ever said to me is, "The older I get, the better my childhood was."
That should be captured for anyone. because your ability to just constantly, one's ability to constantly learn from their upbringing and to just own it, to just say, that happened to me and it is what it is. And now I'm aware of it and I can grow out of it. I can be compassionate, to other people who have that experience or do it differently with my kids.
Yeah, so good luck, man. I'm sure you're a great father.
Thanks. the other thing that you said, which is, I think, really interesting about Braveheart, and it kind of just steps into this other idea of calling. It sounded to me like, in that movie, William Wallace is basically called to do something that he is willing to give his life to. So there's so much I want to unpack about this idea of calling, because if we can go there, the first one is just, what is a calling? Do you talk about that now in your work?
I don't actually use that word very often. I speak more about purpose and vision and having a why. Mm-hmm. I think this word calling is, in my frame of reference, it has some religious undertones, and it's almost like it's a spiritual quest of some sort. And I think a purpose, a man is lost without a purpose. This is very clear to me. Without something greater than my own self-interest to focus my time and attention on, I will fall into the greatest suffering and despair as a man. If my self-interest is my sole focus, I am screwed. And so that is where I think this coming of age theme of being initiated, going in a rite of passage, is so important, because really the boyhood experience is defined by having myself and my own self-interest as my sole priority, really. It is my priority, right? And there are so many of us as men walking around today that have this problem, that we are just still focused on our own problems, because somehow we haven't been introduced to a vision of a life of service. And you know, this life of service, not in a kind of like an automaton, like a kind of a sort of a half-life kind of way, where you're just like in a bit of a sleepy stupor, you just walk through the motions of life, supposedly serving, but you're just doing what other people have told you. And so really there isn't life force involved in the process. You don't feel yourself in the act of service, because it's not your soul expressing itself. You're just following the paths that other people have walked down. And so, to go back to that place of a calling, I have a very clear purpose, and it is to help as many men wake up as I possibly can. And my number in my mind when I wake up in the morning is 1 million. I'm going to reach 1 million men in my life and somehow give them a message that profoundly impacts them. And I must admit, I have I often find myself in a place of being self-centered and thinking about my own problems. But the thing that gets me out of it again and again is knowing I have this why, I have this purpose, I have this vision. And when I don't have that, when I forget that, I am suffering.
What you're saying is, it resonates with me so much. There's so a little bit about my story. Similarly to you, in my mid-20s, you know, I was having all this, I had some anxiety and did some meditation, and that helped with that. But then I still felt like I was a little bit flat. And I wound up studying happiness, and I studied and it actually was quite helpful, for just delivering me more joy, helping me to cope with things, finding ways to change my perspective. And that was kind of my mantra for about 10 years, where I really looked to studying happiness as a way, as like the goal, that I'm really looking to be as happy as possible. And it was only a couple of years ago that I read this great article that looked at the difference between the search for happiness and the search for meaning. And the
yes. story. I'm glad you bring that up.
And the difference was just, it just really struck a chord with me that happiness tends to be something that's very self-oriented. It's about, you know, how can I, you know, turn this situation around to my to a mental positive for me. What can I do to have, you know, all these great things like gratitude and whatnot, but also how can I just enjoy this experience more for me? And
yeah,
what that leaves you feeling though is a little bit hollow. Like there's still something more that you're not quite hitting. And when you actually then make a search, you turn that around and make a search for meaning, you wind up finding that it can actually be much more difficult and you can endure more suffering. But at the end of the day, it's more fulfilling, and you wind up being happier than if you search for happiness directly.
Yeah, that's my experience as well. I think the search for happiness is an absolute dead end. It's idiotic, you know? You won't get happy by pursuing happiness. You just won't. It's something like if what should be inspiring me to go through my days of, you know, working hard on my purpose, doing the best I can to show up for my family and for my woman. And it's not happiness that drives my motivation, man. If that were the case, I would be an emotionally driven, fickle man that was just failing to show up because, you know, I don't feel like it. I'm not happy today, you know? And it's a very, I would almost say pathetic way of orienting myself in the world. It's for an adult man to think like that is a disgrace. This is the way a boy thinks, to think I'm pursuing happiness. It's just the self-centered pursuit of a boy, which is beautiful as long as you're a boy. You're supposed to do it when you're a boy. But what separates a boy from a man is that I do what's right, even if it hurts. Even if there's personal sacrifice, even if there's risk to my own sense of well-being. I shoulder the responsibilities of myself and probably all other people as well. Like, just, you could take a moment and like, what is it that you want? And I think if you're not feeling stronger when you feel into that, and if you don't feel like life force opens up inside of you, then either you have the wrong purpose, you have the wrong why, or you're holding it wrong. And that's important. It's supposed to inspire you.
So the Reclaiming Your Inner Throne was born out of masculinitymovies.com and the reaction you were getting to it, right? And that need uncovered to really build a roadmap for how does a person extract what, you know, these movie archetypes might be and really own that and embody those.
Yeah. You know, I had this experience, I guess about a decade ago, I read this book that probably many of your listeners have read as well, King, Warrior, Magician, Lover, Archetypes of the Mature Masculine. And it's a book by Robert Moore and Douglas Gillette, two Neo-Jungians. And it was a very formative read. It's a very special book for me and for many men. And, you know, there is something about having been given a map that is so rich and so inspiring and feels so relevant for my life experience, but not being really taken into the territory. And that is something that I really missed from the book. And I was just sat there at the end of finishing the book. Okay, that was cool. Now, what now? And and from that, you know, I started writing about the movies on masculinitymovies.com, but that wasn't enough because it was still on a theoretical level. Theory, you know, one of the things that this New Age movement and more, shall we say, the more feminine types of spirituality typically have an anti-mind attitude. Like, if you're in your head, quote unquote, you're doing it wrong. And so like, oh, you shouldn't be in your head. But then if you don't have a map of reality that works, you're screwed. Like, nothing that you experience will actually help you on your way, because you will conceptualize it in a way that actually breaks you down. And so, yes, it was so important for me to have these archetypes sort of transmitted, to bring them into my map of reality so that I could orient my life experience in a more powerful way. But in the same time, I had to go into the experiences. I needed so much stuff to understand what these archetypes mean in my actual visceral felt life experience. And I didn't know how to do that. And Reclaiming Inner Throne came gradually out of those realizations. After having done a lot of men's work myself, I was through many initiations. I was heavily into Mankind Project for a little while. And again, I came to this point of like, but I want more. I want to take it all the way. And so that's how Reclaim Your Inner Throne finally came into being. And there's quite a story that I could tell about this. But suffice to say that Reclaim Your Inner Throne is my soul's expression, if you will, of my gifts. There was a way that I was broken down by life at a particular important part of my life journey in 2012, and I got ill, and all of my life strategies, they failed. And as I was struggling with 5 years of chronic fatigue and basically losing my capacity to do most things that I've come to bring my sense of self from, that's when Reclaiming Inner Throne started emerging from a new place inside of me that I hadn't known previously. And my soul had certainly whispered to me on many occasions before, but it hadn't really managed to come through. But when Reclaiming Inner Throne came, it was like those more primal, earthly, ketonic energies, they started coming through in my own personal experience. And from that place of going to the underworld, essentially, of being completely broken down, finding the gold down there, the gold being Reclaiming Inner Throne, and then starting to give it to the men of the world, I found a formula that is not unique. It is the underworld journey formula. It is the rite of passage formula, where you're taken away from the familiar into the dark unknown. And there you're broken down and rebuilt, and you come back and up into the light, and you return to the tribe, to the familiar, and you give the gift. And that's really what I'm trying to do with the Reclaim the Inner Throne, you know. And so we have men coming to us twice a year to go on a 3-month journey, and they're afraid, and they know they have to do it because their lives aren't working as well as they want them to, and they know that the only way to get there is to go down into the dark places and to face all of those demons that they've been running away from. And that's a path less traveled, and it's not for everyone, but once you've taken it, you're a different person.
You've talked a lot about sort of the fact that there's not a ritual, and that your vision has been to create effectively a ritual for, you know, men who never have experienced that as a way of basically coming of age, regardless of their age.
I call it a rite of passage, an initiation. And we've been exploring it already. So we already got down into the underworld, and realizing that, yes, we have lived a city of being half awake, half asleep, pretending that we got it together, but not really. And all of a sudden, life calls us into the adventure. We go into the unknown. We go on this path of really facing all of the ways that we have repressed our life force, and how we have introduced addictions to cope with our wounds and traumas, and how we have exiled our innocence, and all of these things that tend to happen to people in our culture. We go into the underworld, we face the demons, we find the treasure. You know, it's hard. It's fucking hard. It's gritty work. This is not a walk in the park, this training, which is why guys can feel a little bit afraid. You know, maybe they come on the first goal and like, probably never. No, we don't try and introduce this training as some sort of an easy walk in the park. But sometimes it takes a man one or two calls to actually fully comprehend how serious what he has enrolled in is, and that, yes, he will change. And then that is the point on the map. That is the point of no return. He will have to really accept that if he crosses this point on the map, which is around 4 weeks into the journey, then he will be a different man. In good ways, in very good ways. But the difference may make him a little bit of a stranger to himself initially, because he's basically becoming a different man. But yeah, so we go through the underworld and we start dealing with one of the greatest challenges that anyone ever has to deal with, is to integrate the polar opposite seemingly of vulnerability and power. So most men are stuck in either pole. They're either new aged flowy mama's boys that are just empathetic and sensitive and wonderful, and all they know is the feminine experience, and all of their friends are women and they don't trust men for shit. And so you have some kind of guy that is quite blurry and his edges aren't clearly defined, and he can't pay his bills, and he says fuck the patriarchy, and it doesn't trust rich people, and so on and so forth, you know. But then you have the other side, which is more, then you have the other side, and he's like, he's posturing and he's strong and he hates everyone who's weak, and he probably is right leaning politically, and he says, you know, take charge of your life, be responsible, don't be weak, be a man. And then they, you know, they're either side of the spectrum. This is essentially what is happening in our culture right now. And on the journey of reclaiming the throne, this process of realizing, man, that these are not actually polar opposites. They are two parts of a dynamic dance of creative. It's a dance of creativity. It's a dance of life. And if you take sides in this dance, you will be half of a man. You won't be a full human being, And so this is what we start doing on Reclaiming Your Throne. We show the men that there is a way that you can actually integrate these two sides of your being. They don't need to be at war anymore. And so when that has happened, when you've been on the underworld journey, you've integrated these polar opposites, you are ready to reclaim your inner throne. And so the final part of the journey is to really step into some powerful lineage work, getting really super clear on your why and the kind of man that you want to be, and reclaiming your inner throne in a beautiful ritual that we host online, where it's actually possible to fail, but we give a man another opportunity if he fails. But we don't run a kind of a kindergarten, everyone gets a diploma kind of training. It's real.
Yeah.
You need to deserve your inner throne. And that's essentially the short version. And we just started, actually. So when we're recording this, is the 21st of September, and we started just 4 days ago. So it's, it's exciting to see what's happening with these men already. Big changes.
That sounds like an incredible journey, an incredible map. And as we start to kind of wrap up, I'm wondering what else, you know, do you feel like would be important for them to hear? In the hopes that this podcast reaches, you know, a portion of them for you.
Yeah. Stop focusing on being happy. Start focusing on meaning is a good start. Realize that this cultural moment is a moment of great urgency. You are being called on to step into your fullness, into your full sovereign masculine selves in a way that is unprecedented. And I believe that what is coming in our culture and in our world is going to be a full-scale rite of passage for the whole of humanity. And if you're going to be somehow well-adjusted and maybe even a leader in that process, you need to do that rite of passage now. Because when it happens in the collective in a big way, we're already starting to get there, you will be so in the process, you will be so much in the liminal that you can't really be a leader of the process. This is what I believe. So step into it now, for God's sake. There is no time to waste. We're playing with incredible stakes right now. We're playing actually with the future of humanity. And this is not a time to be focused on, oh, you know, my personal struggles and la-di-da-di-da. You are being called on. You have such gifts inside of you. Such gifts. Everyone does. And it's for you now to step forth. The paradox sometimes is that the way to step forth is actually to slow down. Because the way that you're doing things right now is so speedy that you can't even see the way in which you will be reborn into this new way or this new form that is going to serve the culture. So you need to embrace the paradox as well. We are living in a time of incredible complexity. And don't underestimate the forces that are currently at play in our culture. Find help, find brothers, find allies. Really apply yourself to the meaning-making part of your life. Develop strong daily habits that keep you strong, that make you stronger every day. You need to meditate. You need to work out. You need to have good relationships. You need to serve. You need to have systems. You need... Essentially, the stakes are high, and there isn't really very many ways anymore that you can kind of play half-assed. Life will get you. And I know this to be true. I see it everywhere. It's like the people that are trying to live these partial lives that used to work in a previous cultural paradigm, they're going down. Companies are struggling because they can't adapt to the changing cultural climate. They don't... like so many people are in the liminal unknown right now. You can be a leader in that process, but then you need to take a good long look in the mirror and say that there are parts of who I am and how I live that aren't working. And when that humility has come, you have answered the call. And everything that happens from there on out, who knows? You could come to us and reclaim the inner throne. We'd take you there. You could go elsewhere. But this is the time to act, brothers. It really is the time to act. There's no time to wait any longer. So it's the time for brotherhood. It's the time for service. And there's no time to lose.
Thank you so much for your time, Ivan.
I hope you've enjoyed this interview as much as I did. If you're interested in learning more, Ivan has a ton of resources that you can review, including a great 5-part introductory video series that I watched before interviewing Ivan. Or if you're at the stage where you want to take the plunge, consider signing up for his full Reclaim Your Inner Throne rite of passage. All of that you can get access to through his site, inner-throne.com. I'll also post the link to that site in the show notes for this episode at ignitedwithmeaning.com. Thanks again for listening in to Ignited with Meaning, where we're exploring the terrain of a meaningful life, creating a roadmap for that, and generating more happiness along the way. If you've gotten something out of this show, please subscribe and do share this podcast on social media or with a friend who you think would really get something out of it. Until next time, be persistent, keep looking, and together we'll build the meaningful lives we want.